I'm Jay Barrett, and you're listening to the Kenai Conversation. This morning, we're going to be talking about school funding, and I have with me Peggy Erkenef, the communications liaison with the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and Dave Jones, assistant superintendent for instructional support. And they are here to talk to us about this deal where the other week, Governor Dunleavy decided he wanted $20 million that the legislature had given to schools as one-time funding. He wanted that back. The problem is that funding is already being spent. Here, it's being spent on 11.5 teachers and several other things. Let me go to you, Dave, first, and just ask you about how the situation came up.
Well, how it came up is each year in the legislative process for funding education, they develop funding for us, and it's usually done in either one of two ways. Is they do it through the foundation program by funding the base student allocation, and if they want to increase the amount of funding they give us currently and for the last 3 years, that value has been $5,930. So if they want to give it to us, they change that money and we get that. Or they can give us one-time funding. And when they give us one-time funding, it's called outside the foundation formula. So last year at the end of the session, the legislators got together and said, we're going to, for FY19, for next school year, we're going to give the school districts across the state $20 million, and that will be distributed to schools based on their average daily membership. For us, the estimate was $1,405,000. And so what we did was, and people can go back and look at our June 4th board meeting. We had a work session and discussions on what the board and the administration did with it. It was, we said, okay, that $1,000,004 is going to allow us to reinsert back in the budget 11.5 teaching positions that had been proposed to be reduced, 3 days for support staff, and then some instructional supplies and curriculum supplies. And so we put those back in the budget. We hired the personnel. And they've been working for us since August. Okay, this is the same kind of process that's happened in previous years. And usually what happens with the one-time funding, as the foundational funding, the one-time funding is always based upon our average daily membership of students for a 20-day count period in October. And so what usually happens with the one-time funding is once that count has been finalized and cross-checked at the state level, they cross-check it between districts to make sure we're not both counting the same student. That usually occurs in early March sometime. Then they send us a one-time check for that. As example, in FY13, we got $1,734,000 through one-time funding. They sent us the check on March 13th. Okay, in FY14 we got $1,729,000 in one-time funding. They sent us that check on February 28th. Okay, in FY15 we got over $2 million. They sent it to us March 10th, and so the history had been that this is how you handle one-time monies and that you can plan to have that to spend for the year. So that's what we did. We planned to have it to spend. We put the 11.5 teaching positions in the 3 days back in the budget, hired those people, and we've been paying them since August. And then we heard from the OMB director that simply because we hadn't received that check, we shouldn't have depended on it, and they were going to pull the $20 million back.
Wow, that's completely contrary to what you just delineated there, right? With each year, you get the money in March. Is it because they're just new down there?
I think so. I don't believe she understood how education in Alaska had worked and the funding for those, because clearly the prior legislative practice and the prior school district expenditure practices have been, this is how it's done.
Oops, wrong button. Sorry. Peggy, do you have anything to add about how this started and how it came to the district's attention and, you know, what your reaction was?
I think the big thing was it was a surprise. We all have been anticipating the governor's changes to the FY20 budget coming up, but this one took the districts by surprise as we're already well into the school year and have allocated that money. And we did hear that you shouldn't spend what you don't have, but regardless of that being past practice of how it was handled, it did come as a surprise to school districts because the only reason that money had not yet been received by the district is because of the final numbers that were happening through the 20-day count and OASIS and the verification by the state.
Right. Huh. And has the governor at all changed his position on this? I haven't heard anything to the contrary, that they're still looking for this money back from districts.
I have not heard that the governor has changed his stance. I believe what he said to the legislature was, I believe this is money that can be pulled. If you don't think it's money that can be pulled, then you need to find an alternative source to pay for the supplemental budget that I'm proposing.
Not a lot of other hidden pockets of money around the state right now, are there?
No.
Man. Have you talked with anybody in the governor's office yourself?
No, I haven't.
Oh, okay. I was just wondering how that might go. There. If the legislature doesn't act, then it sounds like he's punted this into their end zone. And if the legislature doesn't act, what happens? So the district goes into $1.7 million.
If the legislature doesn't act on this and we don't receive this funding, then basically the district has two choices. Is we have to look internally and make cuts, which at this time of the school year is awful hard to do because when we go to teachers and offer them a contract for the year, we think we should honor that. If we started letting people go in the middle of the year because funding from the legislature comes, that would affect our ability to hire teachers in the future. So that's the one option, is make cuts. It's not very a very good option, especially if you consider the history of what we've done in budgets and the cuts we've made the last few years. Our other option would be to spend fund balance or go into our savings account. The problem with that is that if you look at the history of what we've done with fund balance, our fund balance has also been reduced over the past 7 fiscal years. We've had deficit budgets in the past 7 fiscal years, and our fund balance is getting to the point that we really can't afford a $1.4 million hit on our fund balance, as Peggy said, as a surprise.
Right. Have you... There's just so many different questions I have about this. All of them kind of involve what the heck is going on with the state. But so the state is expecting the district, all the districts probably, to essentially go into debt for at least part of the year or all of the year?
Well, I would tell you that the governor's office, is expecting that. I think, you know, when you said... Have you talked with the governor's office? Who we have talked with is our legislators, and we've explained to them what went on. I think they understand the process, and hopefully we'll get support from them.
Mm-hmm. Peggy?
I want to add for anybody that's listening that does currently work at the school district right now that we aren't going to be riffing or letting anybody go this year. So if that was something, don't take that away, that those 11 and a half employees might be concerned that they won't have a job in a week. We will honor those contracts that we have already issued this year.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking 11 and a half teachers, that represents what, 350 students being taught by those people every day? That You know, these are the, if you get right down to it, the little kids are the ones who are suffering, right? Or going to?
That's one of our concerns when you look at how we budget. The primary way that we budget and do our staffing is based on our pupil-teacher ratios. And if you compare our pupil-teacher ratios to the other districts in the state, we have much lower pupil-teacher ratios. We believe that educationally, the teacher has a far better chance at being successful instructionally with fewer students in their class. And so what's happening now is if we're forced to delete teachers from the formula, then that pupil-teacher ratio increases and our instructional success will be adversely affected. And that's one of our major concerns when we look both at what the legislature is trying to do budget-wise and all of our other budget concerns that we have.
Mm-hmm. What have you heard back from our legislative delegation down there? There's two of them that are new, so.
Yeah, the supplemental budget was presented to the Senate on the Senate side for Senate Finance, and so my original contacts were with our two senators, Michicki and with Senator Stevens. They've both responded in positive that they didn't support this reduction and that they'll be working to try and make sure we receive those funds. And then our House folks, we copied them with the information and the letter that we wrote, and they also are looking at the situation and are informed about it.
And I've also been in contact with our legislators, and three of the school board members and myself will be in Juneau over the weekend and then meeting with our legislators on Monday and Tuesday through the Alaska Association of School Boards. So we'll have an opportunity to meet face-to-face with our legislators and other legislators to talk about school funding and all sorts of school issues and any legislation or bills that are coming up.
So next week is school board week down in Juneau?
It is, the two days before the governor releases the FY20 budget amendments.
Wow.
So over the weekend, a lot of school board members will be gathering for the weekend, and then everybody will be visiting with legislators on Monday and Tuesday in Juneau.
I bet. Is Gary Stevens still the chair of the education?
He is.
Yeah. Well, that's always good to have. I mean, he's teachers, you know.
Professor. He's been a supporter of education for a long time, and it's good. We're fortunate that he represents us and that he's on the education committee.
Yeah.
I think for people that are interested in wondering who are our representatives or senators and what's the district's position on any legislation, on our district webpage, we do have a page called the Legislature and KPBSD. It lists the names of all of our legislators, their emails. It lists past letters that we've written going back to 2014 to legislators about communications on bills. It has several links that I think are helpful, the LIO office information and the apps that you could download. But then it also lists our legislators for the peninsula and all the schools that each legislator is responsible for in their district. So there's a lot of good information on that webpage, and it's accessible through the district's homepage at www.kpbsd.org. If you scroll down, there's a spot that says the legislature and KPBSD.
You know, quick aside here, you guys have the best school website I've ever seen. I mean, it really is.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And we are in the process, when some of us get a little bit more time, to actually redo that and make it a little bit more user-friendly.
Oh, I may as well make something perfect even more perfect. I mean, it's really good.
Thank you.
I am not getting, I'm getting your connection is not private when I try to go to your website here. Oh, it's not HTTPS. Anyway, other folks will have good luck finding it, I'm sure. And we'll put a link up with this online when we get this Kenai conversation posted on our website. Let me remind you, or actually tell you for the first time, been so busy this first 15 minutes, We're taking calls, 283-8414, if you'd like to give us a shout and talk with Peggy Erkeneff and Dave Jones from the school district. They're here talking about budgeting, the budget. Are we calling this a budget crisis, budget, some sort of acute budget syndrome or something?
I'm not calling it a syndrome or a crisis, but it's really time for people to understand how school funding works, because the school district can't raise taxes. The school district can't go out and we can't have enough bake sales and sell stuff to fund schools. What we rely on is our funding from our state and funding from our borough, and then we do the best possible that we can given the funds that we have. But we do have the ability for people to speak up to the legislature and to the borough assembly so that funding could be to the max. And right now from the borough, it has not been to the maximum allowable. So those are all important things. Now is the time that we really invite people to learn and get engaged and find their voice.
Mm-hmm. You know, and it sounds like this is a perfect time for them to start calling those legislators and talking to them because of the school board week next week in Juneau. I mean, I can imagine the administration is going to feel some pressure next week.
Yeah, and they also could call the governor's office to let them know that education is supported on the Kenai.
Yeah. You know, when I moved back here, I was a little surprised that the borough didn't fund to the cap. Because in Kodiak, they pretty much did.
Well, historically, the Kenai Assembly and the Kenai Peninsula Borough historically has funded to the cap. Okay, they did for a lot of years. And what was, I think, most important was during a lot of years that the legislature didn't fund education as much as they do now. So during those years, I think the borough stepped up and funded us to the cap and gave us the funding that we could. Well, I think what happened is the way that the formulas work, when the state gives us more money, then the borough also has the opportunity to give us more money. And so what happened when the state stepped up and gave us additional funding that we needed, then the borough didn't increase based off of their ability to give. And so we've been under the cap for a few years now. But I think that, again, what we're looking at is in the times in the past when the state, you know, either reduced funding or had flat funding, then that was at a time that the borough stepped up. And we're hoping that that can happen again.
Mm-hmm. I'm also impressed by the school district here that it doesn't appear that there is any student facing thing that the district does that looks like it's been cheaped out on. You know, like, oh, we can save money doing this over here, you know, or we can do this, you know, these students over here don't need that. This district really, it appears to me, cares a lot for these students, and you guys are not putting the cuts in the classroom. In fact, those 11 teachers and the, yeah, there you go, big water
right.
paper.
I think you just made a great point. Over the last 4 or 5 fiscal years, we have made cuts, but we've the administration, the school board has specifically said if we have to make cuts, we're going to make them as far from the classroom as we can. And so if this is all out on the budget page and information, if you look at the cuts that we made, you know, in FY15, we made $1,254,000 worth of cuts, mostly outside, you know, of the classroom. FY16, another $1,375,000 outside of the classroom. In FY17, we reduced $3,436,000. That was some in the classroom, but again, most of it outside of the classroom. And so what we've done is in 18 and 19, again, I want people to know we made cuts. And so when you look at what's happened, I'll tell you that from a few years ago, there's a lot fewer faces at the district office and in central administration. We've tried to keep the schools whole, And that's why last year when we were funded that additional one-time money of $1.4 million, it all went back straight to the schools and in the classroom.
Peggy, you look like you're about to sneeze.
I was going to sneeze, but also I was going to add, in addition to keeping those reductions away from the classrooms and every year being in a deficit mode for those years, we also did use our fund balance savings. And so actually it's been close to $15 million over several years, if you look at that. And imagine if we could have put that all back into education.
Wow. Yeah, the amount of stuff that you guys have done with $1.4 million, you know, $2 million a year for the last 7 years,
right,
really would have helped. What could you do if you had, you know, full funding from everybody? What is out there that you would have the students learn?
One of the things that that we tried to get last year and we're, again, going to look at this year is we need counselors for students at the elementary level and throughout our grades for when we look at the student safety situation and the things that are happening to the students and the trauma that are involved with students that are exposed to now as opposed to what they used to be. We need additional counselors in our buildings for that. And so we would like to add that and do those things. So there's a number of items that if we could get that, we would be able to use it to help our students.
Right.
The other piece that's important and that's important to name is that if we had all that funding, we could also be settled with our negotiations. And we are in negotiations. We are moving to advisory arbitration at the end of February. And we would all love a fair contract. We value our employees.
You know, I was thinking about the what you're saying there, Dave, about the I kind of lost my train of thought about the funding in the classroom, right? The counselors in the classroom. Over the weekend, I watched an entire series on Netflix about serial killers. And, you know, they would kind of go through and talk about the things that, you know, they saw in common with them. It was about serial killers. And the number one thing appeared to be the care of mental health of these kids or these people when they were kids. You know, they get trauma at home. They get trauma on the streets, right, at school. And I was literally thinking, you know, I bet if they had better counselors, some of those serial killers wouldn't have turned out that way. I know there's a lot of things that go into being a serial killer, and I doubt anybody who's going to school here right now is ever going to be one. But counselors, you know, that wasn't even a thing when I was in school. I can't imagine how much better things would be for so many people.
That's part of why we'd like to get that is. If we can deal with those problems at the elementary levels and fix them before they go through junior high and middle school years, then they're going to have a lot more positive experience in school. And when they graduate, that's one of the things that we look at, think it would help. We would get more of our students through the process and graduated with that help. Then I think they're going to go out and be, you know, positive aspects in our community as opposed to some of the negatives if they don't have those problems dealt with.
You know, when I was a kid, when I was a teenager, I actually threatened to quit high school. I almost had enough credits, and the college was right next door. And I kind of thought they were being unfair about one thing. I won't go into it. But when I was young, I thought, I would see people dropping out all the time, and then, you know, they'd get a job fishing, you know, out in Dillingham, they're fishing, or they're carpenters or mechanics or something like that. Eh, you know, you don't have to study that hard in school. I'm 50 years old now, and I believe that the most vital time in our life is when we're going to school, because it really does set you on a path, I think.
Yeah, I think it sets you on a path and gives you the ability to be successful in life, and that's one of the things. If you look at the district's graduation rate, We targeted it a number of years ago, and we've been successful at it increasing every year. There was a period of time in FY09, FY10, and FY11 that the legislature passed a three-year funding plan to increase. It was a substantial increase in funding in those 3 years. We as a district looked at it and said, how do we best spend that money? We put interventionists in the elementary classrooms to help students that were substantially behind in reading and math, bring them up to level. We also put into the high schools additional staff to help with not just the core areas, but we said we want students to be still interested to be in high school. So we're going to fund some of these positions to teach art, to do welding, to do these non-core subjects so we can keep people in our schools. And that's the one thing I think that we can look at and say over the last few years we've been very successful at. And I think part of the reason it's been successful is because when we've got those elementary students and we provide them with that catch-up learning when they're in the second or third grade, and then they're reading at and doing math at the levels they're supposed to be doing, they have far more success than when they reach high school than previously.
Those studies are pretty well confirmed, right? I mean, this isn't a mystery. I mean, schools aren't daycare anymore, you know? I mean, just because you got two parents who are working doesn't mean you shouldn't get an education, you know? It's not just some place to sit and, you know, just sit around.
Yeah. You know, I was listening, I have a cold, so I was home last night, but I was listening to the assembly meeting, and at the end, Assemblymember Kelly Cooper shared a number of statements that she had been told that were students reflecting on the role of their teachers. And it was very powerful to hear how a teacher or an aide or a support staff person in a school has such a powerful effect on our young people. And the schools can really be a place where students can just get that social emotional growth as well as the intellectual growth so that they can become lifelong learners.
Yeah. I see that. I know some people who have recently graduated and they're, you know, what do you call it? Productive members of society.
Right. And it's not necessarily all of our students don't go on to a college or university, and we really have developed over the last several years tracks for students that want to go straight into what we call the CTE, Career and Technical Education. So they're ready to get certifications while they're in their junior and senior years and go straight into working in the oil fields or with different jobs. Alaska's unique. And so we are looking at what are the opportunities for our young people, and not everybody is college bound.
Right. Right. You know, I was actually going to ask about vocational education. It sounded like where Dave was going. I'm a super big fan of that. I'm so glad that you guys are, you know, recognizing that there are students who they're not all intended for college, you know. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean they should be forgotten.
Exactly.
Yeah. You're listening to the Kenai Conversation here on Public Radio, KDLL, listener-supported Public Radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula. We have in the studio Dave Jones, Assistant Superintendent for Instructional Support with the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and Peggy Irkineff, the Communications Liaison for the school district. We're talking about school funding. And we got a phone call while we were on break, and I hope you're still there. Are you with us?
Yes, sir, I am.
You're on the air.
Well, thank you. I just wanted to thank all the school staff, right to the school bus drivers and the janitors right to the top. I really appreciate the what they've done with the students in the Kenai and the entire state. But there's always speed bumps, no matter how well they're managed. And putting counselors in the curriculum or in part of the staff, I think, is very critical. And as the hormonal thing, male, female, and the ages, the aggressions, all that comes into play. And I think they also should include parental education in that by counselors and people that are professionals in that field. Because one of the persons said that a lot of this adult behavior is spawned at the adolescent level and or before. And as we all know, it still takes a village, and we've lost that concept. And that's all I have to say, so thanks a lot.
You bet. Thanks for calling. I appreciate it. 283-8414 if you'd like to call as well. A big fan of the school district, sounds like, there on the line.
That's good always to hear. Good to hear, yeah.
We were talking off line about the budget process and the timing of that. This year, is it delayed or messed up by the governor's delay in introducing his budget?
Yes, it is. Any time we have an election year, it has some bumps in the road. In a normal year, the governor's budget is due by December 14th or 15th. So what happened this year was Governor Walker introduced the budget, and then when Governor Dunleavy came in, he took what Governor Walker had done and adjusted it to reflect lower oil revenues and to increase the permanent fund dividend. And so we went from kind of a balanced budget, a stated balanced budget under Governor Walker, to a $1.6 billion deficit under Governor Dunleavy. And so he is in the process of putting forth his budget to deal with that. And February 13th is when he has said that those details will come out. So as a district, February 13th is a very important day for us. I will be listening to see what is proposed, and then I will need to put a face on what those reductions would mean to the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, and how much money we would lose, or services, or those type of things. And it's key for us, because in a normal process, we have to have our budget presented to the Borough Assembly by the first part of April. And so normally we have, you know, December through the first part of April to work on that and make adjustments and see where we're doing. So really that's turning from February 13th now to the first part of April. So we're going to do that on the 13th, and then we're actually coming out into our communities as we normally do on a regular basis, and I'll let Peggy tell you when and where we're going to be.
Okay.
So we're starting out on Tuesday, February 19th. These are all at 6 o'clock in the evening. And so Homer area, come out to the Homer High School Library at 6 o'clock on February 19th. On Wednesday, February 20th, we'll be at the Soldotna High School Library, and that one will be broadcast via Skype to some of our remote schools so that it's hard for them to get to a regular site. So that night, February 20th, will be also a remote broadcast. On Thursday, February 21st, 6 p.m., we'll be in Kenai at Kenai Central High School Library. And on Tuesday, February 26th, we'll be at Seward High in the library. And I'll be trying to twist Mr. Jones's arm to do a Facebook Live at the end of February, early March, for half an hour to have any other questions as we further break open what does our budget look like for this next FY20 year.
Wow. We have another phone call here. Hi, you're on the air. Hello? Nope. But, oh, hi. Are you there?
If you'd like to make
a... we lost him. Please call back, 283-8414. You know, Dave, when you're talking about, you know, all this money and the changes that Governor Dunleavy made to Governor Walker's budget and all this, for a second there, it sounded like the governor wanted to take money away from schools to pay PFDs. I know he kind of ran on the PFD stance, you know, full PFDs, whatever that is in real life. But is that what's happening? Peggy?
I'm not going to say that's what's happening. I'm, like I said, I'm waiting to February 13th to see what his proposals are going to be and what the reductions to K-12 education will be.
And what I did hear from one of our legislators on the peninsula in a reply back around the FY19 request to repeal that one-time funding was because of the earthquake damage. So they were relaying back to me that statewide the earthquake damage was significant and the funds were needed for that. And that's what a legislator relayed back to me in response to our letter that we sent them about the effect on the Kenai.
Oh, sure. Sure. I'm just cynical. I'm a reporter and I'm cynical. And I think the worst of politicians at all times, except for, you know, the good ones that we have here.
I think what happens on February 13 and what is proposed will show where the governor's priorities lie. And so that's why, again, I'm waiting to see what's going to happen.
Yeah, you have any predictions?
Well, with the need to cut $1.6 billion, I would be surprised if we don't see some drastic cuts statewide in a lot of different areas. It's, you know, the legislature had made reductions over the last few years, and then they got down to the point where they were battling, can we make this reduction or we cannot make this reduction? As Representative Tammy Wilson from North Pole was quoted a couple weeks ago, she said, we had come to the point where we thought there was perhaps maybe $300 million or $400 million more that could be cut. We surely didn't believe there was $1.6 billion that could be cut. So I think to reach that amount, there's going to be some serious cuts that people are going to need to look at and say, do I support that, and what do we need to do?
That's I hadn't heard that from Representative Wilson, but I do know that she is, you know, a very staunch budget hawk.
She is a budget hawk, and she actually came out and said, that was her quote, we believe there was another $300 or $400 million that could possibly be cut, but we did not believe there was $1.6 billion.
Wow.
And we have heard from the director of the OMB office that you need to do less with less. You know, for years we've heard everybody asks us to do more with less. But when I listened to one of the hearings, she said, we're asking people to do less with less.
Huh. You know, sometimes it doesn't feel like we live in the richest state in the union. What else should I ask you? We were talking about budget process and the timeline. You guys put on sort of a full court press here, going to the communities, like you mentioned. Do you get a lot of feedback from you know, innocent bystanders out there? Well, I guess not innocent bystanders, parents. You know, parents of students, they're not innocent bystanders. Do you get a lot of feedback from these people? Go ahead.
We get a lot of feedback when we say we're going to close a school or cut a sport.
Oh.
Otherwise, to be honest with you, it's sad, but we get a few site council presidents and parents that are engaged come to those meetings when Mr. Jones and our director of finance go to be visit and schools and be present. But I think we've protected our schools so much from the reductions over the last 5 years that our families haven't seen it that much because we haven't drastically raised our pupil-teacher ratio or cut library aids or closed pools or done anything that really affects people. And so we generally don't get that great of a response to those community meetings, and we would really like that to change. Mr. Jones might have something to add as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would tell you that we value those meetings because we have people come and make suggestions. And I was reading off this list of cuts over the last five fiscal years. And one of the things that we've heard each year is, if you need to make cuts, make those cuts outside of the classroom. I think the list of cuts that we've done over the last 5 years, $8,457,000, for the greater part, reflect those comments. My concern and our problem is that the cuts that we've been able to make outside of the classroom, there are no more areas that are left to cut without affecting the classroom. And if we're going to have to do that, it could be significant within the classroom.
This this last 5 minutes here is actually very frightening, isn't it? I mean, the specter of losing all of this money or not getting it.
So think in terms, because it's so hard. You hear $1 million, and I mean, I hate to say what's $1 million, but what does $1 million look like on the Kenai Peninsula? $1 million is plus or minus 10 teachers. So if the district had to reduce by 10%, that's roughly, with our budget, am I guessing right, about 80 teachers?
About $8 million, dollars, which would roughly equal 80 teachers across the district.
Wow.
So if you look at the fact that we have 43 schools, some of those are one-room schools, so we can't reduce there. But it if that would happen, and this is not how it would happen, but it would be, you know, roughly two teachers that are currently in classrooms in each building would be gone next year. Hmm. And then that would mean that pupil-teacher ratio that we talked about then has to increase because, you know, we have fewer teachers. You put more kids in the classroom. And
is there a statutory limit to the number of kids in a classroom?
No.
No?
No.
And, you know, something else I want to make sure the public understands is that there will be less teachers next year based on enrollment. Our enrollment in the district did decline this year. And so when just set aside, if we had status quo budget, we still would have some spots that had a reduction in staff, but that's due to enrollment. And that's separate from the budget question.
That's formula funding money there.
That's
right?
Correct.
Right.
Yes.
You know, the one-time money for this year, I sort of quipped in my story. I said, even though it's called one-time money, there's $30 million next year, right? That's already forward funded as a way to allow school districts some certainty.
That's correct. You know, I think that our legislators care about students and funding of students. And so what they did at the end of last year's session was they did the one-time funding in FY19 for $20 million, and they did an additional $30 million for FY20. That would equal $2.1 million if it goes through. But with the governor's office suggesting we should cut the $20 million in FY19, we're fairly sure that when his proposals come forth on the 13th, that the $30 million that the legislature put in place for FY20 will be removed from his budget.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we have another phone call here. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi. I just had a follow-up question regarding the counselors in the schools.
Please, go ahead.
Obviously, just not wanting to take away from teachers in the schools, I was just wondering how or what the proposal is to get those funded, if there is conversation with DHSS or the hospital for that funding.
We've tried to work with those community partners across our district. And we're still in the process of working with them. At this point in time, for next year, it doesn't look like any of our community partners will be able to move forward with additional counselors for us. So that is one of the items that we have on our list of that we would like to do additionally for next year.
Well, thank you. I think it's very needed, and I appreciate you having that ongoing conversation.
Thank you.
Thanks for calling. Got to keep remembering to turn my own microphone up. Dave, you're a sporting guy. You're one of the co-founders of the Kodiak Football League. Let me ask you about sports in the district here. Are sports anymore all funded through activity fees and other stuff, or is the district still paying for a lot of athletics?
No, the district does pay for athletics. The largest portion is the salaries and benefits that we pay the coaches, and then there are some travel funds that the district pays. When we got that new money in FY09, 10, 11 that I talked about, we added some district-wide travel and some state travel. And if you look at the list of the cuts that we've made over the last few years, some of those travel monies have been reduced. They haven't been eliminated. But that's one of the areas that always comes into question when revenues are declining, is what about activities? And so one of the things we as a district have to look at is if you look at students involved in activities, and I'm not just talking sports, I'm talking speech, debate, all of those things, activities. Students involved in activities are far more academically successful than students not involved in activities. And so that's one of those, we've got to weigh the scales on, okay, if we have to make reductions, do we make reductions to activities? Because that's not the central core classroom, or by making those cuts in that area, are we actually hurting instruction for some of our students? That's one of the things that part of the conversation when we look at, okay, how much can the borough give us locally, if we're looking at needing to reduce and we're going to have to reduce in those areas, is that, are people willing to tell the borough we would support the, retaining activities in the schools and would ask that the borough help by funding additionally to support that?
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I would just say, because that is always a hot button item. If you want somebody to come, Peggy kind of referenced to it early, if you want somebody to come to a budget meeting, tell them you're going to cut something. Okay. 3 or 4 years ago, when we were looking at our budget and we were saying, what's instructionally related, what's not instructionally related, swimming pools came up. Okay. And, is the amount of money that we spend maintaining our swimming pools, when you look at the amount of instruction that goes on in them, is it worth having that in our budget? And we had some of the best attended budget sessions we've ever had because the community members that use those pools came forward and said, I'm a taxpayer. I support, the school district and our money going to those, but I also believe that we as a community helped pay for those buildings. We as a community should be able to use those buildings. So what happened, I think it was 4 years ago, we looked at the structure of how we staffed those pools and things, and we actually were able to create some efficiencies and save some money and kind of changed around the services that were offered at each individual pool. So we do it in a more economical way now, and we do support a lot of the community members through the use of our buildings.
Mm-hmm. How much money is spent on athletic or activities?
Activities, if you look at, I think we looked at last year, and between coaching salaries and benefits and travels money, it's just a little over $2 million.
Oh, that's what's the overall district budget?
About $142 million budget.
Oh, so it's a
general fund budget.
Sure.
And I'll tell you, that's the amount of money that's spent from the general fund. All of the activities and all the teams do fundraising as well, and they do expenditures out of the activity funds as well. So that's not just that's not the only amount that's spent out there. The students do a lot of fundraising.
Boy, they sure do.
Yeah, and pay fees and those things. So it's a significant amount of money, but it's also a significant amount of activities within our communities and those things.
Mm-hmm. So I guess the trick is making people aware of all the extra good things that go on in the school, including, you know, the education and the voc ed and the activities, and I imagine art and music are core.
Yeah, the theaters are an area too that were much like the swimming pools that we maintain and our communities use a lot. And so we employ people to maintain our theaters and operate them. So we've also looked at those areas. But it's sometimes it's when we have, you know, when you build a school, a lot of times that school is the center of the community as far as events and what's going on. And so we try and look at that and make our buildings available as much as we can. And then depending on who's using them, if it's not a school related activity, the board actually redid our fee usage for those buildings and said, okay, if it's a student related use, then there shouldn't be a charge. If it's not, there should be a charge, and try and make sure that the folks using our buildings are paying a fair amount for that.
Sure. We have about a minute left. Peggy, do you have any final thoughts? Maybe another call to action for listeners?
I'd really encourage people to come out to those budget meetings, check our social media, check our website, especially after February 13th or later that week. We'll be posting information about what we can look at for FY20, and we want people to be engaged. We're never going to tell people what to say to assembly members or legislators or their neighbors, but we invite them to tell their story and say how KPBSD schools are positive in the community. And the kids that are in our classrooms today only get one chance, and it's today.
You know that feature on your phone app of former students who have made it big?
Every Wednesday I'm doing those highlights.
Yeah, yeah, I haven't checked it yet today, but last week's about Paul Ostrander.
Yeah. Today's going to be the final one on our three city managers, Stephanie Queen, come out this afternoon.
Cool. Yeah, I would just tell listeners out there that we would love to have them involved in our budget process, because there's a fiscal reality and responsibility that the district has to live by. And we'd like to educate them on that, and we'd like them to be involved in that.
Excellent. Well, thank you both very much, Peggy, especially you with your sore throat and your cold, and hope you get feeling better. We've had Peggy Erkenef, the communications liaison, and Dave Jones, the assistant superintendent for instructional support from the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District, on here talking about budgets and funding formulas and what are they going to do without the money that the legislature promised just in case. This is listener-supported public radio for the Central Kenai Peninsula, KDLL 91.9 FM, Kenai, Soldotna.